Light penetrates down far enough to reach those slightly under-the-skin veins, where much of it is absorbed by the blood. Blue light would normally also be absorbed, but it doesn't make it through skin as easily as red, and thus more bounces back. The result is that veins look blue, not because they're full of blue stuff, but because blue light isn't being swallowed up by them, and more comes back to our eyes. If the skin isn't thick enough to cause this difference in light absorption, veins will still look red, such as the flush seen on your face after exercise. On the other hand, if the vein is too deep for light to reach, then we don't see the vein at all. This moment of science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by William Oram, with help from Robert Hongen at the Health Center. There are hundreds more moments of science on our website at amos.indiana.edu. I'm Yael Cassander.
In sports this afternoon, the Chicago White Sox will try to win their fifth straight road game tonight when they open a two-game series against the Baltimore Orioles. The Cardinals are hoping to win seven straight at Busch Stadium for the first time in nearly 3 years when they continue a three-game series with the Milwaukee Brewers tonight. Derek Lee looks to continue his torrid start and lead the Chicago Cubs to their third straight victory when they continue a three-game series against Cincinnati tonight. The Chicago Bulls wrap up a disappointing season tonight when they face the Toronto Raptors at the United Center. The Raptors are 41-40 going into tonight's game. They've already clinched the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference. Chicago, meanwhile, is 32-49 and will finish with its worst record since the 2003-2004 season. The NBA season ends tonight for the Indiana Pacers, already eliminated from a possible playoff berth. The Pacers will finish the regular season against the New York Knicks. And the Indianapolis Colts will open the 2008 season at home against Chicago, the Chicago Bears, on September 7th. The NFL released this year's schedule yesterday. The Colts' home schedule also includes a November 2nd game against New England. That's sports.
WILL programs are made possible by Bavir Cafe 2, offering gourmet sandwiches, salads, and ice cream, with seating inside or outside in the lower courtyard of the new Human Genomics Complex next to Morrow Plaza of iCampus.
It's 2:43. Look out the window of President Charles Steger's office at Virginia Tech, and you can just see the simple memorial to the students and faculty who were killed there 1 year ago today by Sung-Wee Jo. 32 died in all. Over the last year, Charles Steger's role as college president has evolved. He's gone from Virginia Tech's academic leader and fundraiser and booster to crisis manager.
Even today, you can't believe it actually happened. You know, there's something about it.
NPR's Libby Lewis went to visit Charles Steger and filed this report.
I've come to Blacksburg on a tough day, the day the families say whether they'll accept a settlement from the state or whether they'll sue.
So this is not the best time for you to
I'll just try to do my best.
And he does try, but he is hard to draw out. I learn more about him by talking with his brother and his colleagues and his students than by interviewing him. He's 60. He grew up in Richmond. He's an architect by training. Except for a short stint practicing architecture for a firm, he's been at Tech since he was 18 years old.
You're a private person.
I'd say that's true. I like people. You know, it's not that I wish to be withdrawn from people, but yeah, I try to spend a little time every day alone and just sort of, as the Buddhists would say, kind of be centered and be. Once you do that, you can cope with most anything that comes along.
A year ago, a lot of people heard his name for the first time when reporters shouted questions at him.
President Steger,
yeah.
Could you talk about the very difficult process of notifying these families?
That news conference, hours after the shootings, signaled Steger's new public life. After Sung-Wee Cho shot Emily Hilscher and Ryan Clark in a dormitory, the campus police figured wrongly the crime was domestic and isolated. So they didn't try to warn the campus a killer might be on the loose. About 2 hours later, Steger got word his police were questioning a suspect, Hilscher's boyfriend.
So I'm thinking, thank God, you know, this is a horrible tragedy. How do we deal with it?
That's about the time that Cho was chaining the doors at Norris Hall. Then Steger saw the SWAT team running past his office to Norris. He heard gunshots.
It's hard. You have no frame of reference for this, and certainly I didn't.
There wasn't much time to get one. In 11 minutes, Cho killed 30 people and wounded more than two dozen others.
The next day, we had a series of, we had a room set aside for the families, and I was over there a couple times a day. You know, you don't know what to say. What can you say?
Some families read Steger's muted style as unfeeling, defensive. And for some people, Charles Steger will always be the president who didn't warn his students after the first shooting. There are still calls by some families that Steger should resign. He says he understands, but he doesn't agree.
That sort of shock and anger and looking for some reason why this horrible thing happened, it's a very complicated problem. So you have to understand that. I never considered resigning.
He stands by his belief that he acted appropriately, given the information he had. Every month or so, he has lunch with students on campus at the Inn at Virginia Tech. He meets with a different group each time. The Inn is the same place the families gathered last year. Today it's lively, and Steger's at home with his students, and they're at home with him. Junior Jillian Lytle tells him recruitment tours have gone up this year, a surprise.
Yeah, so how many tours a day were you guys doing last week?
I think we were doing them every hour.
Yeah, it was... Because they come right by my office.
There's talk about the underfunded library and questions about why there's only one Arabic language professor. Later, I hear there are students who are down on Steger, who feel he blew it. But the ones I encounter are fiercely protective of him. After lunch, Steger shakes hands and disappears into the crowd. I head for the memorial, and Senior Ryan Smith joins me. We walk the curve of 32 stones. Each has a flower or two beside it, a red rose, a yellow daffodil. He tells me stories about the three victims he knew. Ryan Smith says the people who criticize Steger don't know he bears the consequences of the shootings every day.
A lot of times in the group settings, he is very calm, he's very composed, and that's why he's our president. But sometimes when you just have a small side conversation, you can see the hurt.
Smith tells me about one time last year when he and Steger cried together. They were talking about the moments when it all comes back.
And he said for him it was just sometimes when he's flying out and he looks out the window and he sees the world from a different perspective from that high up, and you realize just how fragile and yet how connected we are. And he said that silence and that looking down, just it gets to him.
Up there, all alone, Steger told him, is where it really hits him. Libby Lewis, NPR News.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. In this portion of the program, we continue our series of occasional interviews with people who are making a difference in our world, leading us to better lives and stronger communities. My guest this afternoon is Nancy Soward. She is Program Director for the Women's Independent Scholarship Program of the Sunshine Lady Foundation, an organization founded by Doris Buffett, sister of Warren Buffett. In addition to offering scholarships and grants, Doris Buffett has said she hopes the foundation serves as an inspiration to others to make a positive difference in the life of someone in need. The Women's Independent Scholarship Program of the Foundation helps women in need, in particular women who are leaving situations of domestic violence and sexual abuse. My guest, Nancy Soward, has been with the Foundation since 1999. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, and you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about the Sunshine Lady Foundation. What's its mission?
Our mission is to provide a hand up and opportunities for advancement to people making new life choices, for disadvantaged people, with special empathy for the working poor, for families in crisis. We focus on domestic violence and education.
Mm. What inspired your founder, Doris Buffett, to get involved in these issues?
Well, she likes to tell about when she was a young mom in Denver, Colorado, back in the 50s, and a friend of hers came over and said, "Come on, Doris, we're going downtown and setting up a shelter." And she said, "What's a shelter?" And her friend said, it's a place where women can go when they've been abused by their husbands. And Dora said, okay, sounds good. And off she went. And she's had an interest in philanthropy all her life, in giving back to communities all of her life. And that was her introduction to domestic violence. She is not a survivor, but she does recognize that when people don't have choices, it really limits their life.
Yeah. As I mentioned, you've been with the foundation since 1999, so she's got to be a pretty good boss.
She's a great boss. She's and she always has a new idea, another project for us, which keeps life interesting.
Yeah. What do you find most rewarding about this work?
Really, the most rewarding thing is working with individuals who are changing their lives. And we talk with applicants for a scholarship program who are really just surviving. And they're called survivors for a reason. They're getting by, but they're very unsure. They turn into thrivers. You can see the change in them as they go through the process to where they're independent and can really see a future for themselves. They have regained their hope, and that's just a very powerful, moving experience for everyone involved.
Yeah. What do they say about what these scholarships mean to them?
You know, it's really quite interesting because it's not the amount of money you give to someone. It's that you say in a very practical way, we believe in you. Here's some money to make your dream come true. It could be $500. It could be $5,000. It doesn't really matter. It's saying we believe in you. And it means everything to them. We have letters and letters and letters from our recipients saying how we changed their lives.
Mm. One of the things Doris Buffett has said about the foundation's work is this: we're always making deals. Each recipient becomes a partner. Mm-hmm. So what's required of these partners?
A few things. And we require that each person sign a contract with us. First of all, they need to go to school. They need to get a good GPA. They need to report to us any changes, and they also agree that when they are in a position to do so, they will help someone else.
Mm.
And that, you know, they take that seriously. They take that seriously and want to help someone else, and will come back to us and ask us, can we help you? How can I pay this back?
Mm. That was one of the things I was really curious about. You know, do the recipients, once they're on their feet, do they make a commitment to helping others? And I guess the answer is yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When was the Women's Independent Scholarship Program created?
It was started in 1999. We started out with just a few people the first year. We had about 15 applications when I started. I thought we'd never get through them. It seemed insurmountable. And now we award about 500 scholarships a year.
Wow.
We do a lot of other things as well. Even though that scholarship program is the largest single program for the foundation, we also have a program called Learning by Giving. It's a way for universities to teach philanthropy. And what we do is work with a professor at the university to set up a curriculum for students to learn about philanthropy, how to give responsibly, and then we provide funds for the class to actually award to programs in their community.
Mm. I have heard that if a college student begins even very modestly to make a contribution, whether it be in volunteer hours or with $5, $10, $50, whatever they can afford, that they forever after will be people who will make a difference in their communities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We see that. We also we work with a group of people we call sunbeams. And these are, as Doris would say, 150 of her closest friends who each get access to $10,000 each year to be philanthropists in their community. And they are the eyes and ears of the foundation and look for opportunities in their community to support worthwhile programs. It's been a very powerful thing. In the last year, Sunbeams accounted for about $1 million in our grants. And a number of those Sunbeams are students. Interestingly. Yes.
So how does one become a Sunbeam?
One gets invited. Okay. One knows a Sunbeam or knows Doris.
Yeah.
Or it's one of those things where you need to know someone.
Yeah.
Because really everybody would like to be a Sunbeam. But it's very hard work. You don't think it is until you start doing it.
Yeah.
To do the due diligence and all the background work to find, to identify and really work with a program or a nonprofit and be a responsible philanthropist. And that's one of the reasons Doris started Learning by Giving, so that we could teach philanthropy.
Yeah. That's why it was so difficult in 1999 to get through 15 applications, I assume. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, let's hope that we have, as Doris Buffett has said, you know, hopefully you and I and Martha Deal, who produced this segment this afternoon, have served as an inspiration to others to make a difference.
Well, you know, when asked, Doris will say how to get started is to start small, do something that you really feel passionate about in your own community. And it doesn't have to be big, but it will start you on that path and really pay you great rewards.
Nancy, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Nancy Soward is Program Director for the Women's Independent Scholarship Program of the Sunshine Lady Foundation, an organization founded by Doris Buffett. It is 2:58 Central Time. This is WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois.
Earth and sky.
We are not asking along the way, where are we going and what are we doing? It's as if we're caught up in a wave and we're just riding it. And I think when the wave settles down again and we stand up and look around, we will not be recognizable in terms of who we are now.
You're listening to Rosalind Byrne at the University of Virginia talking about nanotechnology and our future.
For those who have the resources, intellectual, financial, there will be a group of people who will choose, because we have the technology, to enhance their physical body, to enhance their senses and various properties. I don't think that that will be without a trade-off.
Byrne was one of a panel of experts who explored nanotech's medical applications in a new Fred-friendly seminar series called Nanotechnology, the Power of Small.
The rapid development of some of these technologies takes us aback from that connection to that organic whole, which is the human experience and the animal kingdom that we're a part of in the earth, disconnects us from that. And I don't think we know what that means. I think we've already taken steps out of that connection, and we will take leaps that will redefine what it means to be human.
You can watch the panel discussion on public television in 2008 or visit powerofsmall.org. We're Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Programs on WILL are made possible with support from Sinfonia de Camera, presenting Virtuosity at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, April 26th at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The program includes works by Chopin and Mozart. More information is available at 333-6280.
In the WILL severe weather coverage area, wind advisory is in effect for Champaign, DeWitt, Logan, Macon, McLean, Piatt, and Sangamon counties until 7 o'clock. This evening. The forecast for Champaign-Urbana tonight, partly cloudy and breezy, the low 50, the wind from the south at 15 to 30 miles per hour this evening, diminishing after midnight. Up next here on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu, it's The World. Stay tuned.